Tonight is Parshas Toldos, and the title is The Joy of Lying. And we're going to start off with a great video from Kevin Hart, who I think is very funny. All right, so let's go to the videotape. By the way, you guys have no idea how long it takes me to find appropriate videos for the shiur. By the way, we also have Marvin Baum here, who was, by the way, in the first fellowship class. Second fellowship class. Second, 2008, 2009, not 2007, not 2008. All right, we got some veterans. And by the way, Marvin, say hello to Brooke. She's a fellow this year in the 2020 to 2021 class.
The Zoom class.
Yeah, well, no, she's also a fellow on Wednesdays.
Yeah. Well, no, it's perfect for me. Some of you, I don't know, probably nobody on this call knows, but I'm expecting a baby. So it's very nice to, like, be able to participate from afar without traveling in COVID. So it's worked out very well for me this year.
There you go.
Thank you.
Beautiful good news. Okay. And we got Jakey over there. Darn cute. All right. Anyways, getting back onto the topic of John. All right. So this is the title of this video, which we're going to see, not the whole thing, but you're welcome since I sent it to everybody. You can watch the whole video. This is the Vanity Fair gives Kevin Hart a lie detector test. Okay, that's the video. So let's go to the videotape and comedy ensues.
If you can lift your arms up for me.
Yep. This doesn't make me nervous at all. Totally normal. I should tell you that I have a slight heart murmur.
Okay. Well, that won't affect anything.
Sometimes I'm an asthmatic. I just want you to know.
I appreciate the open honesty.
Yeah, just in case any of this throws the machine off. And I'm allergic to shellfish.
Is your name Kevin Hart?
Yes, it is.
Are you 38 years old?
No. I'm 39. Yeah.
Are you about to take a polygraph exam?
Okay, well, I'm going to be honest and say, I don't know what polygraph means. No, I'm thinking pap smear. Yes. Yes, I am about to take a polygraph. Yes.
Well, let's get started then.
Okie dokie. I should have went to the bathroom.
Do you need to go to the bathroom?
Piece of me feels like I got a...
Is he telling the truth?
Yeah, I am.
First up, let's talk about your life. Are you 5'2"?
Absolutely not. 5'4". 5'3". 5'3".
Kevin?
5'2.5".
I'm 5'2". Try to tell the truth.
Yeah, 5'2".
Are you self-conscious about your height?
Yes.
Do you spend a lot of time looking in the mirror?
What? Who? Who does that? You talking about like what? Like when I'm getting ready at the top of my day? Like when I'm like brushing my hair or something? Yes. Then, outside of that, no. I'm not like in a car looking at myself. Maybe sometimes. Sometimes I'm in the car. myself. Outside of that, no.
Do you like what you see when you look in the mirror?
What? Yes. Yes, I do. With the exception of my teeth from a certain angle. I've noticed that I have very big front teeth. I had Invisalign, but I stopped wearing it, so my teeth popped back to where they used to be, so I got to go back a couple trays. Found that out the hard way.
Do you go to the gym every day?
Yes, I do. You can't tell? You think this sweater is this puffy? It's not. It's my chest.
Who would you say is in better shape? You or this man?
Me, 100%. 100%. All you gotta do is just look at our shoulders.
Really?
My body's way better. And he has a stupid head. Dwayne has a stupid shaped head. So, he loses that battle.
Would you say there's no greater gift than being a parent?
I think that is 100% true. Being able to see young kids grow up and take on your mannerisms and your personality traits is the best thing in the world. You know, to see my kids mimic and do things that they get from me is funny. It's funny, but it's heartwarming. So, I agree.
Of your three children, do you have a favorite?
Well, that's not true. There's no way that I could ever have a favorite kid. So, don't even ask me that. Love all my kids the same. Equally. Like you should.
Are any of them easier to parent than others?
I don't know what you're talking about. I think I'm very lucky and fortunate to have the kids that I have. I think they're all gonna be fine. So, yeah.
Do your kids think you're funny?
No.
Up next.
All right. All right, it's good stuff. You guys can watch the video. I left you the link. Kevin Hart's funny. The fact that when he asked, "Do you have a favorite kid?" you saw the machine going, "Wing, wing." No, I love them all the same, like you should. You just saw that polygraph machine just going wild there. That was a good
comedy.
That was a great thing. Okay, here we go. Question number one. Why is Kevin Hart lying about so many items that seem very, very small? Like he said when they asked him, "How tall are you?" And he said, "Oh, 5'4". And the polygraph machine was going crazy. 5'3", still going crazy. 5'2½", still wrong. Okay, 5'2". Okay. That seems to be very, you know what I mean, what's the deal with, why is he, and I think he's representative of, many people, you know, or conversely, if you have a person who's a guy who's 5'11", what will they say? How tall are you? What will a guy say when he is actually 5'11"?
6 feet.
6 feet. Guys, I am 5'11". I have, in fact, said I am 6 feet tall. I'm rounding up. You know what I mean?
They're white lies. It's like,
I ain't saying that. We'll discover what.
Nobody's 5'11", at least 5'11½".
Right, always 5'11". 5'11¾". Right.
You're 6 feet with your shoes on.
Right. All kinds of rationalization. So, and you see that also when they ask Kevin Hart, like, you know, do you look at yourself in the mirror throughout the day? No. And there was the machine was just going crazy. Like when you're in the car, would you look at your... And, of course, there it went in a very, went crazy. So the question I ask you all is that why is Kevin, which I think is representative of everybody, lying so much about things which are really inconsequential? Who can give me a theory about that? First question of the night.
You kind of do those little white lies to kind of like boost your confidence, your ego, make yourself feel better?
100% correct. In other words, everybody has a brand.
Compensation?
Right. Compensation. In other words, everybody has a brand. And we're always looking to add a little shine to our brand. Being tall, or on the tall side, is a good quality. So even Kevin Hart, who's a world-renowned comedian, would like to feel that he's 5'4", even though for men that's quite short. And the fact that they ask him fairly, "Are you self-conscious about your height?" "Yes." You know, they caught him on the lie. Okay.
But he's also acting in this. Also, he's a character that way. Like, he's made his living off this.
I understand that, but again, it's The reason why it's funny is because its streaks are very resonant chord. We all know this. We all know this. In other words, when I was speaking with Rabbi Mann discussing some of these aspects here, he says, you always know a movie, when you have a movie, which is, it's always based on a real story. Why are movies not exactly the real story? It's always based on the real story. Why is that?
Make it more interesting.
Exactly. The bottom line is that the job of a Hollywood movie is to be 2 hours of pure entertainment and fantasy. So if you had it exactly realistic, reality is not as interesting. So you give it a little shine. We often feel that we're not that interesting, or we want to be a little more interesting, or a little more compelling. So our pitch of ourselves is, you know, we sort of buff some of our personal narrative about ourselves. The best example, of course, is if you go on a date, everybody has what you call your first date story. Can anybody tell me what is a first date story? Chaim is smiling ear to ear. Chaim, you got to tell. I haven't seen such a smile. Chaim, you're lighting up like a menorah.
No, I was smiling because I don't even remember this idea, so, it's good for me to learn for dating, but I was holding back on the other thing when I just said, you know what, let me not talk, but I'm talking about first date stories. It depends on what the topic is, but I don't have any...
What is a first date story that I'm talking about that each person will bring to tell the other person as a way to introduce themselves to the other person? Who can tell me what a first date story is? All right, Shayna, share with us. What's a first date story?
It's a story that's going to paint you in the best light possible while providing some entertainment that hopefully makes the other person laugh and intrigues them enough to ask you for a second date.
Bingo! Correct. Right, the first date story is that you are, which you happen to be, the starring actor or actress in the story. Now, you do amazing things, but not too amazing, because you don't want to be too showboaty and braggart, you know, being too braggy. So it's like it adds a novel, entertaining, but yet a positive pump about your persona to the other person. And if you are a person who's been dating for a while, when I was in the shidduch scene, you know, I did my time, ladies and gentlemen. Long time ago, but it wasn't fun when I was doing it. I'll leave it like that. I had my first date stories, and they were like buffed down to a gem. They were like, I had them down smooth. You know what I'm saying? And then I'd be like an automatic. Like I would be literally stepping out of myself in a third person perspective, watching myself talk to this woman on my first date story. That's how automatic. And of course, was it 100% truthful? Probably not. Okay? Probably not. So that's it. So, little...
Thank you for the tip. I'm going to try to, just like last week, we talked about the right way to give a husband.
Yeah, this is much more... last year was about eulogies. Now we're talking dating and lying.
We're going for it. We're going for it now.
Not just lie, but we're going to get to a whole manner of lying in relationships. Okay. So I'm going to do a little share screen. Let's have somebody read this little nugget over here. All right, Suzanne Bavakasha, read us this little from the social psychologist over here. Go ahead.
Most people lie in everyday conversation when they are trying to appear likable and competent, according to a study conducted by University of Massachusetts psychologist Robert S. Feldman and published in the most recent Journal of Basic and Applied Social Psychology. The study published in the journal's June issue found that 60% of people lied at least once during a 10-minute conversation and told an average of 2 to 3 lies.
Okay. So if you're talking to somebody for 10 minutes, yeah, they're lying to you. Now, likely they're not like crazy lies. They're just what Scott said, a little white lie. You know, something that little buff.
Embellishments.
Enhancements. again, that makes you, as he say, that provide you become more likable, more competent. It's a way to improve your brand. Essentially, just like marketing, like commercials, is a little bit lying, is a component part of advertising. People who are, you know, interacting with various people are presenting themselves in a likable manner, and in order to accomplish that, are going to lie. Okay? So we're going to ultimately get into, there are times we can lie in Judaism. We're going to get to that, of course. And there's times you must lie. Okay? I'm bringing this up because that's an incredible, important part of our Parsha. Okay, here we go with some more cases. How does a person feel when they were speeding on the highway and have been pulled over by the state police? How do you feel? Describe that. Dan Lastman, tell me, I know this never happened to you, but I'm sure you were in a car this might have happened. How do people feel when they get pulled over and the state trooper pulls you over, gets out of the car, and is walking toward your vehicle? How does a person feel?
Nervous. What did they see me doing?
Right. You feel a tremendous amount of anxiety. You feel a sense of,
Is that doing 65? Is that doing 75?
Like, right. You're nervous you're going to get a big ticket. You also feel bad because everybody's looking at you on the highway that you were caught speeding. You know, you feel like a big loser. You know, it's like, you know. All right. Now, imagine the state trooper comes to you and has a conversation. You were able to work it out that you got away with just a warning. How do you feel at that point?
Victorious.
Yes. And
the system.
You feel victorious. You beat the system. And here's the most important thing. Are you going to share this story with somebody else? That you got pulled over and you got out of a ticket. Will this story be shared?
Absolutely.
100%.
The story in the books.
Yes. Now, here's a key question. Let me go to Marvin Baum. What enjoyments would he get from telling his friend if he had told a lie to the state trooper to explain why he did not deserve a ticket? What enjoyment would you get by lying to the officer and, in fact, getting out of the ticket?
I beat the system. Just being in the best position possible, accomplishing my goal, which is to get out of that ticket.
Get out of the ticket.
Enough money for me to stay already. I don't want to give the trooper more money.
Exactly. This guy's picking on me. And look at all those people whizzing by at crazy 100 miles an hour. And I'm a good law-abiding citizen. This guy pulls me over. It's a chutzpah. And so, therefore, getting out of it, there is a tremendous enjoyment of beating the system, by the way. Now, question number six. Would the person share a story with their friends on how they lied to cheat in business? Would a person share that story? By and large?
People actually do that, sadly. There are people, particularly people who run cash businesses, who are almost proud of the fact that they can get away with it, and they say, oh, this is an all-cash business.
Well, there's one thing is saying that I have a cash business, and one thing is that, and I have I've been able to hide $250,000 worth of transactions from the state of New York from the onerous 8.25% sales tax. In other words, most people will not revel and share that information frequently. That'll be called what they would call, people call, my dirty little secret. You know what I'm saying? There's a new category called, there are lies that you brag about, such as the trooper, and there's lies that you don't tell anybody because you're really embarrassed about that. Now, what's the difference?
Well, that's assuming you're embarrassed that you're cheating.
Okay, so you're right. There are people who are sort of a little bit on the, pathological side that are, or they're within a circle of people that celebrate. They look at just like getting away with a state trooper is beating the system, stealing from the government in any way, shape, or form is an opportunity of rejoicing.
Right. I got a PPP loan, blah, 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 blah.
Right. I was able to, you know, get this something from the government. Right. You will hear that. But by and large, but you won't hear somebody how a person cheated another person, not the government, but somebody, you know, a regular customer. Yeah, I shortchanged them. I owed him a 20. I gave him a 5. You're not going to hear people say that as an act of a victory thing. And the question, of course, is why? Why in one case the person, in the case of a beating a ticket from the state trooper, people cannot tell that story. You know, they can't tell a story enough. They love sharing that story. But when it comes to a lie like, you know, stealing from people, they will not share it at all. What's the difference?
There is a difference because it's sometimes a game. Sometimes you get snagged and it's not fair. I mean, one time I was parked on the Upper West Side at a point where there were 5 cars parked ahead of me, and I got a ticket for being in a bus zone, which was way, way ahead. And there was no clear marking on the side, and the signs were kind of contradictory. And this was down, I think, a little bit north of 79th Street. And it was basically a scam. I went back there night after night and started recording that there were cars, and didn't matter whether they had a handicapped sticker or whatever, they were getting ticketed every night.
Right.
And I had another scam where I was in the Bronx, and I got pulled over by the Fordham station there. What happens, the light turns green, and then one of these huge buses, articulated buses, pulls out, blocks all the traffic. I got stuck. I got ticket. Right next to me were the cops who just got off duty from doing this. So right. I'm already worked up, and if I can get out of a ticket in New York City because, you know, I was ripped off, well, one time I got out of it, but I had to go down to Water Street or wherever it was. It was a hassle. It was a day off from work. For $110, whatever the bill, you know, the fine was, but I was determined. I knew it was wrong. I went to get it. So I am, you know, willing to challenge them based on the fact they were doing corrupt things to me. That's the way I would say that a lot of people probably feel in those cases.
Right.
That's
so
why I got out of it.
So they feel that I was, instead of being victimized, I fought back against the system and I was victorious. So it becomes a...
Yeah, but the next time I accidentally go too fast or something, I'm going to want to get out of that ticket too because I had all the hassle before when they were...
Right, so the whole system, the system is rigged. Somebody may have said that once or twice before. Okay, the system is rigged.
Basically, it's a moral judgment and where people identify with what's right or wrong. So we'll allow it to be more right when it's against something we are all against, as opposed to something where morally we think is cheating the next person it's more unethical. So,
or if you think everybody else is having an advantage, say on their taxes, and you're doing a little bit of finagling to get your taxes lower, you're claiming some extra donations to MJ that you didn't actually do, or whatever it may be, because you want to get back because you feel either everybody's doing it, and I don't want to be a
sucker.
Freer.
A fryer.
Marvin, what do you mean? You have your own business. You're giving your charity to MGE as a business expense. You're paying their printers. You're giving their office expenses. So it's a real 50% write-off.
I'm dealing with a right now that's very unique because somebody stole 4 acres of land that were owned by the government that cost $550,000. People normally don't steal land. They steal things that you can hide. They don't do things in the open. And this is a unique case where it's being done in the open. So it's a legal battle I'm involved with right now to overcome, you know, obviously lies that were behind this, that they could even try to do something so outrageous. But people cover it up and they justify it.
Correct. All right, so let's go read. Okay, so let's get some more content here. Let's do the Rambam, the laws of character traits. Let me have Brooke. You want to read Bavakasha, Brooke?
Sure. A person is forbidden to act in a smooth tongue and luring manner. He should not speak one thing outwardly and think otherwise in his heart. Rather, his inner self should be like the self which he shows to the world. What he feels in his heart should be the same as the words on his lips. It is forbidden to deceive people, even a non-Jew. For example, one should not sell a Gentile the meat of an animal, which has not been ritually slaughtered, as if it were ritually slaughtered meat.
Right, so let me pause right there. In other words, even he's talking about a case where even if the cost of meat is the same, and you say, well, it doesn't make any difference to this guy. He's not to keep kosher. Okay? In other words, this is not talking about theft. If a guy's selling meat at $10 a pound and it really is value as $5 a pound, that's just regular stealing. This is called, the Hebrew of it is called genevat dat, literally the stealing of the mind, or willful misrepresentation, deceiving people. Okay? All right? Go on.
Nor a shoe made from the hide of an animal which has died of natural causes, as if it were made of the hide of a slaughtered animal. One should not press his colleague to share a meal with him when he knows his colleague will not accept the invitation.
Pause right there. So this was a big thing on the Upper West Side at MJE Land. You know that Jen can come over for Shabbos lunch. But you invite them, come on, come over for Shabbos lunch. We're going to have a great time. Everybody's going to be there. Now, you know she has to go back to her parents' house because her sister's going to be in town. All right, why would a person do that? Invite somebody that they know they cannot accept the invitation.
They want to be invited back to the other person's house.
Right, they want to score, they want to make that person indebted. Because every gift, in other words, if you give a gift to somebody, the normal human feeling is the feeling of reciprocity. If somebody gave you a gift, you want to in turn naturally give them a gift. And what kind of gift? If somebody gives you a $100 gift, what will be basically the price point of the gift you give back to that person?
$100.
Is the reciprocity, the principle of reciprocity, well documented among the social scientists. A basic understanding of how society works is they give you something, you know, a gift, or you're going to do it in kind. So here, this way, a person is going to try to trigger the reciprocity reaction, but not have to do anything for it. Invite them for a fake invitation. You know they can't come. But you're going to log the debt. They owe you. Go on there, Brooke. Babakasha.
Nor should he press presents upon him when he knows that his colleague will not accept them.
Another example. You got a delicious box of Godiva chocolate. Delicious. But you know, the person is observant and they just had a large meat meal. Okay? They cannot take the chocolate right now. I mean, they could take it to save it. Or you know that they are diabetic. They cannot eat the chocolate. Okay? Hey, Wendy, would you like some delicious Godiva chocolate? It's got the OU on it. Super kosher. Right? Oh, Rabbi, thank you so much. But unfortunately, you may not know I'm diabetic. Oh, I'm so sorry. But meanwhile, what have I done? She's now obligated. I've manipulated her. Can't do that. Keep on going.
He should not open casks, supposedly for his colleague, which he must open for sale, in order to deceive him into thinking that they have been opened in his honor.
Cases like this, let me explain that. In order to the person, I'll simplify the case. A person comes over Friday night, and you're about to open up a bottle of Glenlivet 18-year-old scotch. Delicious. And you're going to have it for yourself because it's been a hard week, and you deserve it. They walk in. Oh, Harry, for you, nothing but the best. Do you like scotch? You love scotch. How about Glenlivet 18 years? Oh, Rabbi, you don't have to do that for me. Harry, how could we have it any other way? The best for the best. Here we go. Okay? So I have effectively manipulated the guy hold on. Oh, my second screen just went out. Okay, so that's Gnevas Das. and the Rambam opened up that we have to be, we're not allowed to manipulate people. And rather, you have to be honest in your representation. Now, this does not mean that if you think something, and let me make it very clear, just because you think of a comment, is that how you feel, you should not share that. But it means when you share it, it should be truthful. Now, I'll just point out the caveat we've learned in this class many times. So I'm just going to be a quick review for those who've not heard that. There is an exception if you're lying. And what is that exception? I'm not going to finish it. What's the exception? Shana, if you, I'm calling you, but yeah, because I know you know this.
Isn't it to protect someone's feelings?
Yes. What they call shalom bias. Or Jenna called shalom. In other words, you're lying not to get out of, not to gain something unjustly from somebody, not to cover up your mistakes. You're doing it exclusively for the emotional well-being of the other person. Classic case, your wife turns to you at the simcha, honey, how does the dress look on me? There is only one answer. Honey, you look beautiful tonight. You might not think that's the case, but that is the answer you must get because she can't do anything about it. She's wearing the dress. She's in the schmorg. All you're going to do is make her feel bad all night long. That she, you know, you don't say, actually, no, I don't like this dress that much. It makes you look a little chunky, right? No. That's not good. In fact, you should never say those words ever. If she's getting dressed before the party, you say, you know, I think the other dress is way more flattering. You know, you'll say it in a positive way. 28 years of marriage here, ladies and gentlemen, made many mistakes. Okay, moving on.
I can't tell if Lisa smells bigger. Lisa's hands.
Okay. So this is
Rami. That's. But then regular common sense lies also, right?
What do you mean by common sense lies? No, the Torah says, midvar sheker tirchak. You should distance yourself from lies. He says, I interrupted too early. Brooke, finish off the punchline of the Rambam. Here we go.
Okay. So first,
Yeah.
It is forbidden to utter a single word of deception or fraud. Rather, one should have only truthful speech, a proper spirit, and a heart pure from all deceit and trickery.
Okay, that's a high standard. Okay, that's a pretty high standard. Okay? So, there are exceptions, but that's the general default setting is a no-lie perspective. Now, this, of course, is an introduction, of course, is because we got a parsha filled with lies. Okay, so we're going to start a little bit of the story, or I'll fill in some of the gaps. So I'm going to intro. The story is long. I'm just going to give you a little introduction. The beginning of the part of the parsha, which I've discussed in years past and in this shiur, not doing that again tonight. Go on to Wayutera. We can talk about. You can check it out where. Yaakov bought the right of the firstborn from his brother Esav in exchange for a bowl of soup. That's a famous case. Later on, Rivka, Jacob's mother and Esav's mother, feels that Esav is not should not be the family leader, should not be have the right, the blessing of the firstborn, and she wants to do this whole ruse. Where basically Yaakov goes into Isaac, the elderly, sight impaired Isaac, dressed as Esav, right, to get in there, deliver the food, because she heard that Isaac, Yitzchak, told Esav, go out into the field, hunt the food that I like, cook it on up, bring it home, and I will bless you. He's giving him the big blessing, the big end-of-the-life blessing, okay? We have dealt with other classes. What does it mean? What is the idea of a blessing? That's another class. Again, we're not talking about that. This Parsha has a lot of goodies, so we're focusing on the lying component of the Parsha. Okay, so Yaakov does not want to do this. She says, you know, if I'm discovered, my dad's going to curse me. So Rivka calms him down, says, no, the curse will be upon me, which of course means fundamentally, I will go in there and tell it was not, you know, that really, you know, she'll tell the whole story and mitigate Yitzchak's anger toward Yaakov. All right, so that's, I've just sort of queued up the story. That's the background. And let's actually take the story live. Let's take the story live. Let me have Elise, Bavakasha, read out the Chumash if you can.
Okay. Jacob went and fetched what his mother had requested. She took the kids and prepared them using the tasty recipe that Jacob's father liked best. Rebekah then took her older son Esau's best clothing, which she had in her keeping, and put them on her younger son Jacob. She also placed the young goat skins on his arms and on the hairless parts of his neck. Rebekah handed to her son Jacob the delicacy and the bread she had baked. He came to his father. "Father, yes. Who are you, my son?" "It is I, Esau, your firstborn," said Jacob. "I have done as you asked. Sit up and eat the game I trapped so that your soul will bless me." "How did you find it so quickly, my son?" asked Isaac. "God, your Lord, was with me." "Come closer to me," said Isaac to Jacob. "Let me touch you, my son. Are you really Esau or not?" Jacob came closer to his father Isaac, and Isaac touched him. He said, "The voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau." He did not realize who it was because there was hair on Jacob's arms, just like those of his brother Esau. Isaac was about to bless him. "But are you really my son, Esau?" "I am." "Then serve me the food. I will eat the game that my son trapped so that my soul may bless you." Jacob served it, and Isaac ate. He then brought Isaac some wine, and he drank it.
Okay. Then at that point, he gives him the blessing. Okay? Fine. All right, go on. I just sort of cut the story down a little bit. Go on.
Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, and Jacob had just left his father Isaac when his brother Esau came back from his hunt. He had also prepared a delicacy and brought it to his father. "Let my father get up and eat his son's venison," he said, "so that your soul may bless me." "Who are you?" asked his father Isaac. "I am your firstborn Esau," he replied. Isaac was seized with a violent fit of trembling. "Who, where is the one who trapped game and just served it to me? I ate it all before you came and I blessed him. The blessing will remain his." When Esau heard his father's words, he let out a most loud and bitter scream. "Bless me too, father," he pleaded. "Your brother came with deceit and he already took your blessing. Isn't he truly named Jacob Yaakov? He went behind my back, Akav, twice. First he took my birthright, and now he took my blessing."
Okay. So, from the simple reading of the story, who is the aggressor and who's the victim?
Esau's the victim.
Say it again. We all said it one time. Who's the victim?
Esau's the victim.
Esau's the victim. And Yaakov is basically, manipulating his nearly blind father and getting the blessing.
Yeah, and Rebekah too.
And Rebekah is she's the mastermind.
She's the mastermind.
She's the mastermind. So this is a terrible thing. And this is when we say in our Amidah, God of Avram, God of Isaac, God of Jacob. This is our role model. What's going on? Okay. That's my question. All right? So...
Not just a rabbi. I just want to ask one question.
Yeah.
You refer to your God, Jacob, your God, not our God, your God.
Yes. So he may have said that as a way of trying to speak in the way that Esau would have spoken. You know what I'm saying? He's trying, as he's impersonating... impersonating...
Right. Impersonating a non-believer.
Yeah, or somebody who's not as observant or whatever. He's trying to mimic as best he can his brother. Now, remember, they're twins, and maybe they had, similar voice timbre, but the word choice would be sort of like a giveaway. All right, There's a huge amount of questions on the story, okay? But I want to make it, but I'm not, I don't think there's enough problems, so I want to add Arashi in here, which will make it even more perplexing. Then we'll go to a resolution, and then we'll bring it home. Okay, here we go. Rashi. So Rashi says, when Isaac, Yitzchak says to Esav, he says, Anochi Esav Becharecha. I am Esav, your firstborn. Which means, now, plain reading, what is Yaakov doing to Esav? What is Yaakov doing right to Yitzchak? To his face?
Lying.
That's called a bold face lie. He's looking him in his eye, says, I am Esav, your firstborn. Boom. All right? Simple, clear, a lie. Now, Rashi, bringing the Midrash, does something very interesting, seemingly very lawyeristically, to Yaakov's words. He says, I am, in his own mind, he that brings food to you, and Esav is your firstborn. So seemingly that Rashi is sort of like, he says, Anochi, I am the guy bringing you the food, and Esav is your firstborn, sort of dividing the statement into two, and it's somehow or another making it such that Yaakov, in fact, is not lying to his father. So what's problematic with that?
He had criminal mind, I feel like. He had, you know, when you're, there's a criminal, I'm not a lawyer, but you have to have the intent, you know.
We know he has an intent. He is implementing a very well-orchestrated plan cooked up by his mom. And he's saying the line, the fact that he might say, I am, the guy's bringing the food, and Esav is your brother, he's your firstborn. Does that make it not a lie?
Well, isn't it the willful misrepresentation that the Rambam was talking about?
Yeah. I mean, but is this a Geneva's Das, or is this just straight out lying, sheker? In other words, Geneva's Das, let me just make a distinction. Geneva's Das means I do something which the normal person would interpret as meaning, idea. In other words, when I say, Wendy, will you come over for Shabbos lunch? Wendy interprets that Rabbi Rosenthal is being very nice by wanting me to come for Shabbos lunch. Not Rabbi Rosenthal knows that Wendy can't come for lunch, but wants to score some points with Wendy anyways. That's Geneva's Das. That is saying a statement which will be misinterpreted by the listener, but, you know, sneakily. Here is Yitzchak Adam a straightforward question. Who are you? I am Esav, your firstborn. That is a unadulterated, straightforward lie. Yet Rashi is sort of like coming in there and legalistically parsing his statement to somehow exonerate Yaakov. What the heck is going on? So how do we address this thing? First of all, those who've been in my class for a while, you have to understand that what is Rashi trying to accomplish? Whenever Rashi brings in a midrash, he's trying to share you an additional layer of understanding. He is not trying to supplant, change the plain meaning. The plain meaning is that what's going on here? Rivka had convinced Yaakov that the blessing should go to the firstborn, should go to the leader of the family. Her assessment was that Esav is not fitting for that role. You could say evidenced by the fact that he married two women who were idolatrous earlier in the text, A. Or just based on her knowledge of him. Now, why didn't she have a wife-to-husband conversation? Why did not Rivka sit down with her husband, Yitzchak, and say, you know, I know you love Asaf a little more. Let me tell you about our son Asaf. Now Asaf was very slick and did not leave any obvious imperfections that she could make the case. So it's going to be a he said, she said. But yet she felt very strong that would be very deleterious for the Jewish community, Jewish people going forward, if Asaf would get this blessing. Now, I'll just add a comment. We've discussed this on other years. I'm just going to bring in some background. It's not that Yitzchak was an idiot and he thought that Asaf was a great tzaddik and that they were the same people, because he saw that Yaakov, according to the Midrash, was Yoshev O'Aliyim. He dwelt in the tents of Shem and Aver. In other words, he was sitting and learning all day long. He was just, you can't fake that. He knew that his sons were different. But he envisioned that the Jewish people would be led by a coalition. You'd have Esav taking care of the issues of state, military, political leadership, and that Yaakov be the spiritual leader, like the rabbi. And they'd work in unison. But the assumption is that Esav would be on board with that. Rivka saw that ain't not happening. And I cannot, she felt that Yitzchak could not handle that truth. So she operated based upon this whole ruse. Now, so again, what is Rashi getting at? It's not, the bottom line is, as Suzanne pointed out, there was criminal mind, there was criminal intent. The goal was get dressed up, impersonate Esav, deliver the food, get the bracha, and boot out of town. That was the goal. Mission was accomplished. So what is Rashi saying? Oh, I am the one who's bringing you the food. And Esav is your firstborn. What is that? What is that? Here's the key point. This idea I learned from one of my teachers, Rabbi Reuven Mann. He had the following idea. He says, Yaakov knew that he had to lie. But Yaakov also realized that what's going on here, the reason why he did that hesitation, Anochi, I am, pause, Esav Becharecha, not that he was not lying. He was 100% lying to his father. He was 100% deceiving his father. But he also recognized that, as we discussed the beginning part of the shiur, there is lots of joy to lying. Manipulation is fun, as we discussed with the state trooper. Can I get away with it? I'm on a date. Can I impress the girl based upon this, shall we say, highly scrubbed and enhanced image that I'm presenting to the person? There's an enjoyment of getting away with it, beating the system. So Yaakov, who is essentially a truth teller, even when he's doing when he's lying, he wants to make a marker to himself not to fully indulge himself in the satisfaction of the lie. In other words, there are times I have to lie. Yes. And it's the right thing to do. Yes. But is that good to feed my desire to enjoy the lie? No. And Yaakov knew that there's a big enjoyment to lying. And that has an intoxicating element to it. Okay? So he's doing it, the pause, I am, Esav Becharecha, is not to make the lie less to Yitzchak. It's to remind him that, you know, you should not be getting so much satisfaction. Yes, from the whole experience. And going back to our state trooper case, what is harmful about the guy lying to the state trooper and getting away with it? What's problematic about that? What's the problem with people lying to the police?
He's going to repeat the story, and other people think they can tell the same lies and get away with it, but it's not going to work every time.
Is it because he'll be not effective in his lying? Is that the problem?
I would think it's more problem for a person, because if a person's trying to be more truthful, they're going to start getting more in the habit of lying and appreciating the value of their enjoyment of it, and they can get sucked into the next lie, the next lie.
All right, so he'll become more addicted to lying. What else is the problem?
Eventually, they're going to do something dangerous, and lie is not going to help them
In this case, they could kill somebody and get an accident too.
Right, exactly. In other words, the reason why we have state troopers on the highways in general, because it creates a deterrent for speeding and people dying on the road. In other words, we might feel, oh, it's just a way for the good state of New York to extract cash in order to support a bloated bureaucracy. That's how we feel about not paying the ticket. The reality is, yeah, they're making a ticket. The goal, that might be a goal, but the other goal is to ensure that people do not go 100 miles an hour through on the throughway and will kill somebody because you're going 100 miles an hour, distracted with then doing a little texting. You're going to be in somebody's back seat in 5 seconds, and then it won't end well for anybody. So that's the reason. So lying, especially when, to get out of situations, could result in very harmful consequences. And to bring it home is, imagine your child told you the story that they lie to get out of the ticket. What would your reaction be then? Would you be going, oh, good son, well done, well played? Would you be happy about that? You're a 19-year-old kid coming back from Binghamton University, zooming down the 87 at 87 miles an hour, pulled over by Officer Pete. You'd be happy that he got out of the ticket? Shayna's giving the big no. Why would you not be happy, Shayna?
Well, I wouldn't be happy because, A, my kid lied, but I would be, I think, even more unhappy that he got pulled over in the first place.
Okay, yeah, because he's driving like a crazy person.
Right.
Because I'm nervous that he will do something in his youthful exuberance that will end his life. That tragically happens all the time. We've all done the rubbernecking thing on the freeway where there was an accident which you knew did not end well. And it, God forbid that's your kid, that's a nightmare of epic proportions. So the bottom line is, you don't want the kid to lie because it's hurting him. Also, how else is lying harmful in relationships? I'm just dealing with the most practical level.
Relationships need to be built on honesty. Lying in your relationship is going to just destroy their relationship.
Yes. A person, there's an issue. So how does a person deal with it? They lie about it. Does not resolve the problem. And then the problem exposed another way. What do they do? Another lie. And another lie. And before you know it, you can't keep track of all the lies, and you're going to get caught. And then you're going to have God forbid, lose the relationship. So there is a lying when it's exclusively for the emotional well-being of the person, but then there's a lying which is covering up a real problem or a misdeed that a person has done. And that's a disaster. The bottom line is the Torah is encourage a policy of honesty to deal with problems in life and own up on them, and then that's it. Now, that's where you really got to be really honest. A person's in a bad, there's a situation and you have to do a mental checklist. Am I lying to preserve the emotional well-being of this person who I love? Or I'm covering up the fact that I'm an idiot and I'm being an idiot and I'm being inconsiderate and I'm, whatever, or other issues. So this is something that we deal with as we learn from the social scientists. We deal with this is not a halacha which we deal with like once a year on Rosh Hashanah, like Mitzvah Shofar. Mitzvah Shofar is once a year. This is every day, all day. Okay, the desire to lie is immense. Okay, and again, as I made very clear, there's a time to lie. You know what I mean? And there's lying to, you can lie to not hurt somebody's feelings. Hey, you want to go out bowling? You hate bowling and you don't like this person that much. So therefore, Wendy, I don't like you that much. And on add to that, I find bowling very boring. Obviously, that's a time to lie. Wendy, that's I really appreciate the invitation. Unfortunately, I already committed to whatever, XYZ, whatever the lie may be. You know what I'm saying? Classic example. Somebody's, somebody calls. This is a double-edged sword. This is a little bit of a complex challenge. Your kid picks up the phone at home, and the person calls and says, are you home? And the person's going, doing the wave. No! Right. So the problem is there's a special idea that you want to be very careful not to teach your kids not to lie. You want to be truthful to your kids. In other words, whenever you promise a kid, you promise a kid a toy, you got to deliver, because else you're going to teach them how to lie. So that's a little bit of a double-edged sword. But let's say it's your spouse, and you can say that, because saying the truth is this: no, he's actually sitting right here. He's in the middle of a Netflix movie, and which he finds far more scintillating than talking to you. Can you call back at another time? So that's very mean. So therefore, to say, he stepped out, can I take a message? And he'll get back to you, take a message. That's legitimate. A child situation is a little bit more difficult because you don't want to teach your kid to be liars. That's another problem.
Well, I was also going to mention, in terms of safety, I remember when I was old enough to stay alone in the house, my parents used to tell me if the phone rang and someone said, is your parent there? Like, I should always say, yeah, like, they're in the bathroom. Like, my parents would say, never say you're alone.
Correct.
Just say, oh, my mom is on another call. My mom's
right.
In the shower.
Right. That's excellent. Now so lying for an objective good reason, obviously for peace in the home or certainly safety. And again, going back to our story, Yaakov and Rivka were involved in a ruse here because they felt that the future of the Jewish people were at stake. Having Esav as their leader for the Jewish people would be a disaster. So therefore, it was legitimate to lie and deceive. And that's why, in fact, once, notice, Yitzchak himself agrees with that. Once he realized what's happened, he's like, he's trembling. Who, where is the one who trapped game and just served to me? I ate it before you came and I blessed him. The blessing will remain his. Which means once he realized what happened, went and down, he fundamentally agreed that he had made a mistake, and that the ruse was, that the fact that Yaakov got the firstborn blessing was legitimate. He's signing off on that. So that's our takeaway. There's so many delicate. Life is a very delicate balancing act. We have so many relationships which we cherish, and being truthful is a critical virtue of being a Jew. Not being truthful is, as mentioned, first of all, can cause tremendous damage. That's one practical reason. And ultimately, is that if you want to have a relationship with God, it's all about having an honest, looking at life in an honest way. And if you teach yourself to be a liar, the worst thing you're going to do is really lie to yourself. In other words, if you're so used to being habituated to lie, the victim will ultimately become yourself. And you will basically involve yourself in a terrible consequence. So to be honest and truthful is a virtue we want to encourage, because all development requires being honest with ourselves, confronting where we have limitations and where we have room to grow. So being an honest person and with ourselves and with others is a critical virtue to really improve. Now, doesn't mean that every truthful, I want to make that very clear, just because it's truthful doesn't mean it has to be said. You know what I'm saying? We're constantly looking around the room or outside, and we make all kinds of funny judgments. Doesn't mean that we have to say, hey, you're really fat. No, that might even be true, but that does not have to be said. That's not helpful. You know what I'm saying? I'm making the obvious point very obvious. Truth does not mean you become Amelia Bedelia, that, you just say everything in a literal way, okay? You have some sophistication. So that's the basic point. And it says the signature of God is truth. And our goal in life is to be godly, and therefore is to be truthful. All right, any questions?
Yeah, I'm just curious, the way you had the document, which I didn't see, but I am Asaph, your brother. I'm your firstborn.
I am Asaph, your brother. Anochi Asaph. The three words is, the Hebrew is Anochi Asaph Becharecha. So Rashi's saying, he's saying it, Anochi, I am, like the guy who brought it. Pause. Asaph, your firstborn. Now, I'm making the interpretation that his intent was to lie, and Yitzchak heard it as a lie, and that was part of the game plan, and he executed the game plan. Really, the meta trying to say that even Yaakov wanted to create create a little break in himself, that even if I'm going to lie, I should not get the scintillating enjoyment of the lie, the joy of the lie, because there is, as we try to make the case tonight, there is a lot of enjoyment of lying. One enjoyment we didn't mention so much, I'll just mention it quickly. The joy of lying is the joy of controlling others. I'm the hustler. I don't get hustled. I hustle everybody else. I'm pulling the strings.
Grant Cardone, sell or be sold.
Exactly. Sell or be sold. That's it. That is, you have to understand, that is like a narcotic level desire. People who are you know, pathological liars or lie very quickly, it is like a drug to them. And there's a tremendous enjoyment. A, they look better and they get the enjoyment of manipulating others. There's a profound enjoyment. I just want to make that very clear. We have met people like this. You have met people like this. And it's something which it's not such a simple thing to remove yourself from. But the Torah has it. You got to have a campaign of truthfulness to yourself, and it's not so simple. I don't want to minimize it. And all right, we discussed it, all the aspects.
So I didn't say my question.
Good. Sorry, Chaim.
So I mean, my question, right? Since he bought the firstborn, right? So he could have answered, "I'm the firstborn."
No. So the question is, when he brought the Bechorah, doesn't mean that he becomes the firstborn child, because he's not. He has the right to the firstborn. Now there's two possibilities. There's a machlo between Rashi and Ibn Ezra. What is the firstborn? Right. What did Yaakov actually buy from Esav? A, plain reading, Ibn Ezra. The firstborn gets a double portion. So he bought the payout. In other words, when dear old dad dies, there's going to be an inheritance. It will be divided into three parts. Asaph gets two parts. You get one part. And he says, what do I need it for? I'm going to die. I'm in a very dangerous profession, i.e., I'm a hunter. I'm likely to predecease my father. So for me, cashing out, you know, factoring the inheritance now, I'll get the money now. That's Ibn Ezra.
There's a commentary, though, maybe that's the other commentary, that he knew there was blessings coming, right? So he wanted blessings from his father first, no?
So
afterlife?
No. I'm just saying that the right of the firstborn means the right of inheritance of the firstborn, or B, Rashi says it's a right to be the spiritual leader of the family, like the Kohen of the family. But doesn't mean that he is now no longer the firstborn. That's the plain understanding, and therefore he's entitled to the bracha. He's entitled to the bracha. Now you could argue that no, the whole status of firstborn is sold, and therefore Yaakov is correct about that. But then again, he should have then be straight about it, tell Yitzchak what happened, went down. In fact,
when you teach your kid about lying, and we say it's not okay to lie, how are we justifying this parsha to teach our kids when it's okay to lie?
Simple answer. You are not allowed to lie unless it's very except for saving your life for shalom, and certainly to save the Jewish people. If Esav would have been coronated as the leader of the Jewish people, that would have been disastrous for the Jewish people.
A quick question on that. We were saying before that Rebecca could have reasoned with her husband or talked about it. like, how do we compare the value judgment of, like, why is it okay to lie when there's another thing that you could have done that was more moral than lying? Does that question make sense?
Yes, it does make sense. So you have to, way I'm learning the story is that the fact that Rivka did not directly confront her husband that our son, Asav, is not really fit for this role, apparently was not an option available to her because he would have not simply believed it because one of the earlier, you know, Midrashim that talk about Asav is very, you know, not only was he a hunter, but he was also a verbal hunter. He, as to quote Chaim, he was of the sell or be sold mentality. So he had hustled his father, and there were no clear proof that he was a rotten person. In fact, from the text, there's little evidence other than his marrying these two idolatrous women that he was such a terrible guy. So it was a very subtle thing, and Rivka felt, since Yitzchak loved Esav as well, that she felt her assessment was, he's not going to buy it. Okay? So she her judgment was, he's not going to buy it, and we have to do an act of subterfuge to get the job done. You know, there is a thing in life, and this is a very important point. You know, you could have a loving relationship with, you know, husband or a wife, and there are certain things that you know that they cannot handle. Doesn't, in other words, just because you're married does not mean you're obligated to say every single thing to them. You have to use your judgment. You know, this happens all the time. Let's say a person gets married and had relationships before the marriage. Is it a good idea to share all the relationships that they had heretofore? Shayna's shaking her head. No, it's only going to be hurtful and unhelpful. Why are you doing that? So you can come into the marriage with secrets, and that's okay, provided they're not deleterious for the relationship. Obviously, if a person has, a stage 4 pancreatic cancer, and you don't tell the person, and you get married, that's wrong, okay? Another example, you know, a person has same-sex attraction, and then gets married and doesn't tell the other person. That's wrong, okay? So there are things that you must reveal, and there are things that you do not have to reveal, okay? So there can be secrets in relationships. It's encouraged. But they have to be secrets that are not going to affect the relationship, and the revealing of those secrets will only be deleterious. Why does the guy want to know about the guy that his wife was with? He doesn't want to know about that. Does not want to know about that. Okay? Doesn't want to know about the boyfriends. Does not want to know about the boyfriends. Okay? All right? Any questions about that? All right. Clear. All right. This is a juicy topic. There are more things here, but again, part of our goal of doing a little Parsha class, we bring up some juicy topics, things to think about, think about the Parsha. And if you have follow-up questions, you can always WhatsApp me is the best, quickest way to get to me. Everybody's got my WhatsApp. Or email me. All right, guys. Have a great night. Lila Tov.
Thanks.
Thanks, Rabbi.
Thank you.